Well, I greet you all in Jesus' name this morning. It's good to be here and be inspired in the word of the Lord. Well, as some of you know, I was away about a month ago to have a weekend youth conference for Cumberland Valley, and they had assigned me three different topics. And the last one on Sunday evening, I plan to use a modified version here this morning. Maybe you'll see a few little details coming out that might apply to the youth a little more than the adults here, but I decided to leave a few of those things in and to change a few things and make it practical to our day today. And I don't know, I thought about that Virgil's coming this week and I don't know what all he'll talk about, but maybe some of the same thoughts will cross over. Maybe some of them cross over with this morning's thought about fear a little bit. And we'll get into that here in a little bit. But I want to just start out describing a young man that lived about 3,500 years ago. Maybe you can think about who this young man is before we get to him. But he was pretty confident in his abilities. And today's world, we would say he would flex a little bit. He would kind of show off. He could outwit people. He was stronger than everyone else. And he ended up and got the girl that he really wanted. At least for a short period of time. And he was unstoppable. We all know who this is. We're getting there. So turn to Judges 16. This man ended up a miserable ending to his life. So Samson, he thought he had it all under control. He thought he could go out. I think this is one of the saddest verses of the Old Testament is Judges 16, verse 20. And it says, I will go out as at other times before and shake myself, and he wist not that the Lord was departed from him. How do we get to the point that we don't even know that the Lord is gone? We just don't know. So I want to start back at verse 15 and just read this last part. Of course, we know a little bit of the story of Samson, how he was born. It was thing that his parents said, how do we order the child? They did their best to raise him as a godly young man. He went down there to the, he saw this girl in Timnah, and he said he wanted to go marry her. It doesn't even give her name. Delilah's the only one that got a name. Anyway, that's beside the point. But he went out, said, get her for me, for she pleases me well, and all this stuff. Well, let's just start here at verse 15. This is Delilah. She was recruited by the Philistines to do this. They found out that he had a little thing for Delilah, and he said, okay, we're gonna reward you. So her heart was not with him right from the start. And she said unto him, how canst thou say I love thee when thy heart is not with me? So she's saying the reverse of what's actually happening here, because her heart's not with him either. Thou hast mocked me these three times and hast not told me wherein thy great strength lieth. And it came to pass that when she pressed him daily with her words and urged him, so that his soul was vexed unto death, that he told her all his heart and said unto her, there hath not come a razor upon my head, for I have been a Nazarene unto God from my mother's womb. If I be shaven, then my strength will go from me, and I shall become weak and be like any other man. And when Delilah saw that he had told her all his heart, she sent and called for the lords of the Philistines, saying, come up this once, for he has showed me all his heart. Then the lords of the Philistines came up unto her and brought the money in their hand, and she made him sleep upon her knees. And she called for a man, and she caused him to shave off the seven locks of his head. And she began to afflict him, and his strength went from him. And she said, the Philistines be upon thee, Samson. He awoke out of his sleep and said, I will go out as at other times before and shake myself. And he wist not that the Lord was departed from him. So this man said, I've got this. I've got it under control. I can handle it. But God was gone. How was he so comfortable? There's just a number of questions. How was he so comfortable in enemy territory? What can we learn from this? And maybe you could title the sermon this way. I'll get to the title here in a second. Apostasy. How does it happen? How do we not know when God departs? There are four things that I want to focus on here today, and then we want to come off with a little bit of a remedy at the end. But number one, a companion has an influence on your destiny. It's just a fact, and we'll talk about that a little bit. Number two, those lacking self-control are spiritually weak. They're an easy target. Number three, life will not always continue like yesterday. He thought he was going to just go out as at other times. Number four, spiritually falling asleep in Delilah's house will land you in hell. And I've titled the message this morning, Sleeping in Delilah's Lap. So he went from living in a Jewish country, and yes, it says some of these things were of God because he wanted an occasion against the Philistines, but he put himself in a very dangerous spot and thought he could handle it. And he could for a while, and we want to get to that. So number one, a life companion. Of course, this was focused on youth, so maybe this is more pertinent to them, but like I say, I left a few of these things in here because they can give you something to think about, and maybe for our youth. But we see how Samson was very much driven by this whole thing of, in the first story of his first wife, he said to his parents, "Get her for me, for she pleaseth me well." And if you look back here in Judges 14, 1 to 3, we can just read the verses real quick. You can see that he was totally driven by what he saw. It had nothing to do with a godly character at all. Samson went down to Timnah and saw a woman of Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. And he came up and told his father and mother and said, "I've seen a woman of Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. Now therefore, get her for me to wife." Then his father and mother said unto him, and his father and mother are stepped in here and said, "Is there never a woman among the daughters of thy brethren, among all the people, that thou goest to take a wife of the uncircumcised Philistines?" And Samson said unto his father, "Get her for me, for she pleaseth me well." So just a little bit on this thing of a life companion. There are many things that we could say about this, but those who disrespect parents' advice and make a central choice not based on godly character will begin to compromise. Godly principles will erode. So we say, okay, our parents said, this is not a good person for me to go out and date. This is not a good person. Stay away from them. It's not going to end well. And they start to compromise on their godly principles. And I've actually witnessed this many times in my life where you see a young lady or a young man that you think, well, they're a godly young person, and they marry someone that you're kind of like, not really sure how that's going to work. And sooner or later, things start to go downhill. And of course, we do need to choose one that we're excited about, someone that makes our heart skip a beat. That's important. But we do have to choose wisely because there are many shallow relationships where we can see there's a very shallow relationship, a very central relationship between Delilah and Samson. It was just what they were getting out of each other's companionship. There wasn't a true deep love there on either side. So these shallow relationships in our current world, they lead to bad marriages and or radical departure from biblical teaching. And we see people that go out and I can think of some of my relatives and various people that have either ended in divorce or some really bad situations. And it was mostly a central relationship was the beginning of it. So just a little thing that I had in for the youth was the whole idea of a hands-off courtship. It's a very important point to me. Just put it to the young people this way. A guy that cannot respect you during dating with a hands-off relationship lacks self-control, and whenever things get rough and lust, not love, is controlling a man, soon there's stress in the marriage and the devil takes him down with pornography and adultery. And we see that here in Judges 16, verse 1. You're here in Judges 16. Then went Samson to Gaza and saw there an harlot and went in unto her. And he didn't have self-control. His first wife was given to someone else, and this is where he turned to. Things were stressful in their relationship, and that was where he went. And we see that in Solomon's life as well. In 1 Kings 11, verses 1 to 6, it talks about Solomon had many wives, and they led his heart away, and we could go into that. But there's more to talk about this morning than just the relationships of our companions and our choices there. I would like to spend a little more time here on the part of self-control. So we see Samson was a man that did not have self-control. He was out of control most of the time, and he left lust, he left anger, he left just his impatience with people and whatever, anything that he felt he needed and wanted, he got. And that was the way he lived his life. Get her for me, for she pleaseth me well. And whenever they found out the riddle, and it was because that they had went behind his back and all of that, he went out and killed a bunch of people. Well, some of that was of God, and it's really hard to sort all that out. But there are just many things that require self-control. We mentioned lust and anger, but there's self-control in finances, there's self-control in food, there's self-control in screen time, self-control in how much work we do, self-control in how much recreation we have, and the list could go on and on and on. You can just fill in tons and tons of things that require, say, okay, a little bit is good, a lot is bad. So, and the thing that we see here in this story of Samson, this is really important. So we say, well, self-control, well, I've said no three times. So Samson had this situation going on here with Delilah where the first three times he told her something completely different. He essentially had the self-control to say, I'm not going to tell her, I'm not going to tell her, I'm not going to tell her, I am going to tell her. So the first three times don't even hardly count. We can say, well, we did put up a fight a little bit, but but saying no three times is good, but that doesn't really count. The battle is really won when the temptation leaves us, or we find, and we can talk a few things about that. So when the devil leaves. But the biggest thing here, and this is the part that I really want to stress about Samson's life, is that we cannot flirt with temptation and expect to win. There's the Bible talks about that we're supposed to flee. That's comes from 2 Timothy 2, verse 22. It says, flee also youthful lust. If we put ourselves in a place that we know is temptation and we say, well, we're strong enough, we're Samson, we're tough, we can handle it. We know this is going to be a situation that might be a little challenging. We cannot expect God to be with us if we walk into a serious situation where we know. Now, when the temptation comes and we're not prepared for it, God has promised that he's there to rescue us. And I think God can rescue us in other situations where we unknowingly are not as fearful as we should be, like Samson. He didn't have enough fear here. But we cannot flirt with temptation and win. Another point in this part of self-control is within this land of ease and plenty, we have all kinds of stuff, and the world around us is saying, you don't need self-control. You can just indulge, just have fun, do this stuff. So there's all kinds of incredible offers, and you see this on every street corner. It's just amazing to me how many vape shops are up, and you see these liquor stores, and there's Powerball signs in nearly every gas station window, and we say, well, these things don't tempt us. But to a lot of people, they do, just to indulge. Like, what if I just went in there and won the lottery, or and they go in and spend half their paycheck or a quarter or a tenth or whatever it is. They waste their money in these indulgences. And in every town, there's a place that you can go get these things. You can go find some sort of smoke shop, you can find liquor, you can find the lottery. It's in every town throughout America, and we've just become so used to it that we don't even think about it. But the thing that I want to think about and focus on is we have something way more dangerous that we carry around with us on a daily basis that's right in our pocket that's a temptation. So in our world today, the cigarette companies, I think it was in 1970, required to put the Surgeon General's warning on their cigarette pack in a label that is, I think it's about an inch high and 3 inches long. I forget what the exact dimensions are. But the government finally said, this is such a danger to public health that we need to put a Surgeon General's warning on. Interestingly enough, our current Surgeon General, or past, I don't have this exact, this is beside the point somewhat, but he recommended that we put a similar Surgeon General's warning on all social media platforms that they're required to put right on the front saying, this may harm your mental health to be involved in this social media. And there's actually a push for this because of how much suicide and depression is among the youth of today. So we need to think about this. We don't think about it all that much. We get and spend a good bit of time on our phones And we don't think about how serious it is, because cigarettes require an ID to be able to purchase. You need to be prove that you are this age to be able to, and there's maybe some push even for that to limit what children have. But can we do that? Can we make some standards for ourselves and for our children? Can we be like Daniel and purpose in our hearts that we're not going to take part in the world's wine, if you want to call it that, literal or figurative wine, I guess. But can we use self-control? Can we lead by example and say, okay, I'm not going to have, and I should have said in the outstart that this message is not something that I have conquered completely in my life. There are times where I could be a better example. But I just think it's a challenge. When the world knows it's a problem, do we know what things we should limit in our homes? And one of those things that we mentioned is screen time and videos. Our children that are under 16 years of age should have no access to the internet without us being in the room, period. End of story. I don't think that should even be up for debate in our homes. We try to monitor what our children have access to. They have a limited amount of access to one computer when needed. And this is just important because these things are designed. We see them where they're these fun little videos. Oh, it's exciting and whatever. We can find it. And it just draws our hearts away and kills spiritual life and does nothing for building godly conviction. And, of course, Harry Argo went in a lot of this. I don't need to go all through that again. So we see this thing of self-control. We could go into a lot more details on that, but I want to keep moving here. One of the things I really want to hone in on is life will not continue on as before. We see this here in this story. So Samson thought that life was just going to continue forever this way. And there's two different aspects of this that we want to look at this morning. One is that his thought, kind of Samson's thought in this, is that I got by, and I got by before, and I got by the time before that, and I got time by the time before that. And I'll continue to be able to get by. I'll continue to be able to handle this temptation, or I'll be able to handle this being in enemy territory because nothing really happened. And some of these points kind of bleed together here a little bit. This kind of falls in the next part, kind of goes together. But by nibbling from Satan's mousetrap, by basically letting, well, we just have a little bit. We can just have a little of this, and we violate our conscience a little bit. We know that maybe we shouldn't be taking this, or we shouldn't be doing this, or maybe we should be fill in the blank. It doesn't need to just be about screen time and phones and all that. This could be in our, like I say, in our work, or in our anger, or in our finances, whatever. You fill in the blank here of what you struggle with. But when we say, okay, we probably shouldn't be doing this, as we kind of dull our conscience toward that godly teaching that we know that our dad wouldn't approve, or we know that our church brother wouldn't approve, or we know whatever, fill in the blank there as well, and we do it anyway, if it's not repented of, it can constantly wear us down. And we think that we can continue on, and we're going to continue to be able to get by, and we're going to continue to be able to place ourselves in a dangerous situation and be okay, and we won't know when God departs. And the big problem is, and we see this in our world today, we see this thing that God's mercy, we realize God's mercy, you've heard Edwin say this many a time, God has great mercy. God's mercy is so great, we feel like that it's infinite. And maybe this is doctrinally incorrect, but God's mercy, I don't believe, is infinite. He has mercy for a set period of time. He says, my spirit's not always going to strive with man. One day, it's going to be over, and that's the last chance you had with God's mercy. From then on out, it is terror and judgment, and you have a right to fear. It's back to what Doug talked about this morning of living in fear. We should be fearful of where that edge is when God departs from us and we're over on this side, suddenly it's going to be bad. And you think that Chinese or North Koreans are good at torture and that God is not wanting to torture. But what I'm saying is His judgment is thorough and complete, and he knows how to bring you to your knees. And yeah, his mercy is not infinite. So, so when we get this thing, we think that life's going to continue on, and we can get to some of this later, but the only remedy is to repent and turn around, confess where we're at. So there's going to be reaping for choices we make. Are we going to get those out now or in eternity? And like I say, we'll talk about a little bit of this later. Maybe we'll just bring it in now. But the other thought here in relation to life continuing on as before, I want to just give you this thought as well. We've discussed this a little bit in our Sunday school, I believe, last Sunday. And that is, life is not going to continue on as before. We're living in a time where is what do you want to say, atypical of normal history. And we see here in 2 Peter 3, verse 4, people said this all throughout the ages. Where is the promise of his coming? Everything's continuing on. It's pretty much the same as when my grandfather was born, this whole thing. But yeah, we can look around and say, well, there's no Great Depression. There's been no draft for the last, 60 years or whatever it's been. There's no religious persecution happening right now. There's no plague that's wiping out half of our family. We don't have the bubonic plague or smallpox or what. There's many different plagues that have gone through the world. There's no war that's happening on our soil. And all these different things, and we think that this is normal, and it's just not normal. The Bible talks about it, that we can expect that the godly people are going to suffer persecution. We can expect that people are going to turn against us at some point. And this is something that it seems to be more and more apparent that that is going to swing violently the other way one of these days. And are we ready? So the challenge is, what's the answer for this? Well, to build some conviction when you're not facing these things, what do you think? Daniel and Joseph just woke up the morning that they happened to be in a bad situation at Potiphar's house, or they happened to be faced with making a decision about to eat the king's meat or not, to buy into his program, that was the first time that they really had some conviction in their life? No, I think they had that mindset beforehand, that there's things that are right and there are things that are wrong, and there's, well, this is a gray area. The king's actually requesting us to eat it, and yeah, I don't know. You think we'll be okay with this? There's so many times that we kind of rationalize our reason, like, well, if we say something, they're going to not listen to us anyway, so we might as well not avoid the controversy, whatever it is. But there are some principles when there's no war, there's no persecution, to build our convictions in loving our enemies, or that lying is a sin, or cheating on our taxes or cheating other people in business is not okay. There are many different areas that we could grow in and build conviction on, modesty in our life, and that's not just in clothing. Of course, that can apply to our appearance, but simple living. We don't need to have the latest and best. We don't need to be like Samson showing off, hey, I got this whatever. So that when the time comes that if you are drafted, you are in prison for your faith, you're not just a pushover. You're not easily going to give up because you know where you stand and what you believe. So what you probably already know is there's already been some persecution against religious people, people that have prayed in front of abortion clinics, people that have refused to make cakes for certain weddings or officiate in some illegitimate marriage. These things have already happened, and they're going to continue to get worse. And I just think about this. It really only takes one person, one loud social media influencer, to pull a sermon off the PMC website or an article, blow this thing up over the internet, and suddenly the sweet, lovely Mennonite Amish people that everyone's so like, oh, you are good people. You hear that once in a while. You are good people. We really appreciate having you in our community. We'll turn like that, and we'll be the hated of the land. People will talk behind your back, be It will happen someday. And I'm not saying that to make you fearful. We listen to this thing about fear. We don't need to fear man. God is on our side, and nobody's going to be able to stand against us. If God's on our side, he will give us the words to speak when we show up in court. He will give us the strength when we're in prison. He will give us fill in the blank. So it's just something to think about. Not always are things going to continue as they were before. But even if there is peace and prosperity for the next 50 years, and maybe you're not tested, maybe you pass away, there's still challenges to our loyalty to God every single day, things that we're going to face. And if we're not determined, have some self-control, and have the knowledge that not all things are going to continue on as before, we can resist some of these things. Number four, this part of falling asleep in Delilah's lap. So we talked about this. People say, oh, you're good people. And we look at our neighbors around. Some of them are divorced, and some of them smoke, and some of them are maybe even a little bit hooked on a few painkillers or drugs or whatever. And we say, well, they're a fairly nice guy. He's a nice fella. I enjoy visiting with him. And we look at them, and the world is not our friend. Just like Delilah was not Samson's friend. She said that she was his friend, like, oh, you're a really nice guy, I really like you. But her heart wasn't really with her. And I think about, how did he fall asleep in her lap? Well, one illustration I thought of was in the last day or two, I've been working on my shop a little bit. It has 12-foot high ceilings in there, so I put 2 2-by-6s on top of each other, 12 foot long, span between two ladders, and made a little walk plank out of it. So they're not screwed together, so they're not super stiff. They're a little springy in the middle, and I'm not the most athletic person, so I'm up there standing on these 2-by-6s that are flexing a little bit. My son's helping me, and it just feels a little bit unsteady. But after doing it for an hour or two, I'm up there walking around not thinking about it nearly as much as I did the first 10 minutes that I was up there. And it's the same way. Things that we feel are edgy, and you see this in the world. People are like, oh, come on, try it. It's not going to be this big a deal. And you see, and you could take this into BMX biking or whatever, where these people do these gigantic jumps and leaps with motocross bikes and things. And you say, well, how did they get to doing 80-foot high loops in the air that are extremely dangerous? Well, they started off doing little jumps as a 10-year-old or 5-year-old in their backyard and kept doing it and doing it. And they don't think about how, they maybe do think about it, but because a number of their friends are dead. But the same thing happens to us. We get conditioned. We keep going and going and going and just pushing the envelope a little bit more. And eventually we don't know that God departed from us. Like Samson, we feel like we're strong enough. We can handle this association with the world. And we do the things. So they say, we kind of start doing some of the things that they want us to do. We do the things that they think are cool. We use their language. We kind of buy in a little bit to some of their fads, or whatever it is, whether it's on clothing or hairstyles or vehicles or whatever. We buy into their thing. We use some of their slang words. We're doing their stuff. We kind of, we do a little bit, or at least we watch some of their entertainment or something. And maybe even we look up to some of their actors or some of their singers or some of their sports stars. And these things creep in among us. And our loyalty kind of slowly switches from conservative, Anabaptist, wherever we were raised. And then sooner or later, we have our head shaved and, using Samson's analogy here, we eventually buy into the program. We've lost our identity as a child of God, and we're part of the world. See, the issue is, once we've adopted the values of the world, then we are the world. The world doesn't really need to absorb us in. We don't need to leave the church. We can just kind of hang out with them and do their thing, and we're still part of their program. And once we bought into their values, of course, we'll commit their sins. And we see cases where people even go further than what some of their worldly neighbors do in degeneracy once they've decided to go against their conscience. And it's if you're old enough, you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. It's shocking. You go to weddings and funerals and you see people there that you went to school with, you grew up with, and they're tattooed up with 5 rings in their ears, and you're like, how did they get there? Most of the world doesn't go quite to that extent. Yeah, they'll put a tattoo or so on, but they're not going to have ones up their neck and rings all through their ears. What happened? Well, it starts by being ashamed of where you're at today. Are you ashamed of your traditional values and the Anabaptist historical practices? See, Samson thought all along, he thought, what does long hair really have to do with my strength? This is where he decided that it disconnected. It's like, well, it's a bad illustration maybe to use a plain suit, but this doesn't have anything to do with salvation at all. In fact, it's hot enough that I'd probably be better off without it. But what if it does? What if there is a mindset behind what we do and why we do it that does influence our spiritual life in some way? He thought, there's no connection between my hair and my strength. Yet God specifically said, do it and I'll be with you. And how many times do we say, well, there's not really a Bible command and what I'm doing really has nothing to do with salvation? What if it does? Maybe it doesn't. And we do need to be wise on some of these things. But here are a few things that I would just like to turn to 1 Peter 3:3. We haven't turned to a lot of scriptures this morning. I've referred to a few. But 1 Peter 3:3 talks about our appearance. Of course, this is talking about appearance, but I want you to think far beyond just what we see. Because appearance just is what's in our heart coming out, right? So, 1 Peter 3, verse 3 talks about the people's heart, what their hearts are doing. So, who's adorning? Let it not be the outward adorning, plaiting of the hair, wearing of gold, putting on of apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart. So there's the heart tied into how we look. And that which is not corruptible, even the more ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God a great price. Do you think doing things to be seen of men, doing things, and it can be just in the money we spend on our toys and our tools and our houses and our properties, our vehicles, you could fill in the blank. There are thousands of things that you could fill in here that have nothing to do with a Christian woman's veiling or not wearing jewelry. Of course, some of those things are tied into it, but the whole concept is we're not part of the world system. We're not buying into what the world values as being an exciting thing. We're not falling asleep in Delilah's lap. Well, what is the remedy? We want to just close up with a few positive things. And we've kind of alluded to a few of these. The idea of repenting and confessing, finding some accountability. I think those are things that we need to face when we're dealing with struggles, especially specific sins or challenges in our life. We have trouble with anger. We have trouble with lust. We have trouble with we have bad spending habits. We have issues going on. Getting advice should never be, and it is sometimes, it should not be an embarrassing thing for us. We say, hey, you know what? I see that you understand finances better than I do, or I see that you understand time management better than I do, or you seem to be a more organized person than me. We can get some input from other people, and it might not even be on a sin-related thing, but getting advice can be certainly helpful. And then being accountable, and asking someone to check up on us once in a while. I thought about that. I did not check up with someone the other day that I probably should have. Anyway, that's beside the point. But so those are some basic principles. But I want to turn to Ecclesiastes. This was the verses that was given to me for this topic. Ecclesiastes 12, verse 13 and 14. And it says it this way. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. So it's pretty simple. It reminds me of my favorite verse that do justly, love mercy, walk humbly with your God. Three things. Or love God and love your fellow man and follow the golden rule and you'll be good. So it's pretty simple, right? But I think it's very interesting what the next part is probably just about as important, and that is, for God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, for whether it is good or whether it be evil. So we have good on the one side, we have evil on the other. Both are secret, but God's going to bring them out. Sooner or later, people are going to find out. And like we had talked about before, one of the paths to victory is we're either going to pay in this life. There is reaping for mistakes that we make. No matter what it is. But if we know that God's going to bring every secret thing, the ones that are really important to take care of are the secret things that are bad. The secret things that are good, they can stay there. That'll be fine. It'll come out in its time. And Jesus says that we don't do our alms before men, and he advocated against not having long prayers because it's just a show at some point. Keep your prayers short and simple. It's good enough. But if you're hiding sin and living in defeat, get it out and get it taken care of. You're going to sleep better. You're going to have peace and joy. You're going to love fellowshipping with God's people and not be ashamed to be identified with them. There's going to be a whole different transformation in your life. And once you have that, it brings back that joy and that happiness. And these are things that I've experienced in my own life, and I think you all know what I'm talking about as well. When you just feel like you're not ashamed, people can ask you questions. Why did you do this? Where were you at? What was going on? How did last week go? And it's like, yeah, it went well. It went well. And we're truthful about it. To have those things, because sooner or later, it's going to come out either now and in eternity. And which would we rather have? Well, judgment is much, much longer. For eternity. So be committed to living for the Lord, to fear God and keep his commandments. So if you have good deeds, don't worry about those. They'll come out in judgment day. But if we remember that every day, every sacrifice we make for the Lord, so we say, well, living life is hard because we're tempted with this and we're tempted with that. And it would be nice to have what my neighbor man has. And it would really be nice to go on a big vacation to Switzerland or Spain or wherever you want to go, or Alaska maybe, whatever it is. I would love to go there and spend a whole month and just, yeah. And maybe there's nothing wrong with that. I don't know. But the point is, we can look and we can be enticed by these things of the world. And we can say, get her for me, for she pleases me well, and whatever application that applies to your life, I really need to have. And then we find out we buy that thing, or we go to this place, and we come home and we're no happier than we were when we left home, because we came back to the same problems we had before. But every sacrifice, everything that we make for the sake of the kingdom, and we say, okay, we know that God doesn't want us to do this, so we're just not going to do it. And we have self-control. And we have a fear of being in judgment. So we respond to that fear of the one that can destroy both body and soul in hell, fear of the world, because we have sharpened our conscience. So all of those sacrifices we made will be repaid billions of times over. We think about this verse that says that our light affliction, which endures but for a moment, will work for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. So we have this light affliction that endures for a little moment on the scales over here, and we have this exceeding eternal weight of glory over here. And we say, okay, so all the sacrifices that we make are going to be way worth it because we've got this treasure over here that we're going for. So I really want to pray and hope that you've been faithful when you get to the end of life, that you hear, instead of not knowing that God has departed from you, that you hear these words, well done, thou good and faithful servant, thou hast been faithful over a few things, I will make thee ruler over many things, enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. And we think about, there are many people who have gone before us, people that have committed to saying, I'm going to serve Christ no matter what. These are some people that have heard these words, I have no doubt. Janet Deem has committed her life. We've just She had a funeral here just recently. John Risser is a friend of ours that we know that is going on to glory. My mom has passed away. Are you committed to living a Christian life, and are you ready for the Lord's return? Let's kneel for prayer.